Reckon you day. Everybody reckons they know what korma is, but when it comes to the point, very few people know what korma is.
That's exactly right.
What is korma?
Well, korma comes from the word kurama, which sort of means poached in oil. And this is a really ancient recipe, which has probably changed through the years because we're talking 10th century onwards. But today, most people think of a korma as a sort of a blonde, yellowy, whitey, thick almond or cashew nut curry.
Do they?
I think that's a general opinion. Depends on who you talk to.
Well, it does, because I've asked a couple of people in the last couple of days and they seem to think it's quite brown. In fact, they can't really tell me what's the difference between korma and curry.
Well, there's a world of difference, though curry would probably be the more generic kind of heading under which you would have then many different kinds of recipes, because there really is no one curry. What is a curry? I mean, you know, then we'd have to talk about curries. Mm. But we are here to speak about kormas, so let's stick to that. So korma comes under a curry, and it's a really rich, non-watery, mild curry.
And you said poached in oil. That's definitely not fried.
No, well, you know, there's like not a lot of distinction, because I saw a recipe recently and the Americans were going quite crazy about this fish technique, cooking of fish. And basically it was just like between shallow and deep frying, and they were calling it poaching in fat.
Well, what's in a name?
Exactly. Mm. I mean, you know, so what's the difference between shallow frying, deep frying, poaching in oil? Of course, poaching, other poaching is different. So really, you know, you just put any kind of fat in a pan or even in an oven, so, and then let it cook.
It can be any kind of fat. So in different parts of India, do they use different fats?
Absolutely. So if you're in the north, ghee would be the fat of preference. Then going to the east, mustard oil. The south is very much coconut oil country. And there's sesame oil in the west and in central India. So yes, many, many different kinds of oils depending on the region.
And do regions fight over which is the proper way to do it or the best way to do it?
I don't think regions are really much concerned about anyone else. They just like, you know, this is the way we do it. Mm. And that obviously is the right way.
Mm. So then what about the food that you're poaching in these various oils?
Again, you can have different ingredients depending on what you're cooking. So kormas are any kind of ingredient. It doesn't have to be, while probably you would say here lamb korma is one of the more popular kormas, but you could have a korma with vegetables, of course. Chicken is a very popular ingredient, but then also all kinds of game, rabbit, which is something that not associated generally with Indian cooking, but there is lots of game and rabbits sort of under that, so wild rabbit rather than farmed. Venison, you could have seafood like prawns. So yes, really, ingredients don't make a demarcation between this is a korma or this is not a korma.
Mm. So are there particular types of flavors or textures that go best with it? For example, the other night we had a barramundi korma, and barramundi is a good meaty fish. Does it need to be meaty for this sort of technique?
Well, remember, it's going to be poached. We're going to be poached in... we are not going to be poached. At least we don't hope so. But the main ingredient is going to be poached in oil. So it has to be quite sturdy for that to happen, because, you know, you'd have to have some length of time for that, for the flavors to really penetrate. So, yeah, so from that point of view, it has to be a fairly sturdy piece of anything.
Yes, but apart from that, it's just what you like to try.
Yeah, and also what's come through the ages, because again, I mean, obviously things evolve and there is a contemporary take on the korma now, but you sort of follow the dictates of what maybe the great, great, great grandfathers and people like that sort of used to cook with.
Mm. And what did they cook with?
So
everything.
Everything and anything. The only thing that, you know, I read somewhere, I think, was the ancient, you know, the kings, they loved the, and this is the Ayurvedic time, they loved the rat. So I draw a line of that. But yes, you can see how, you know, varied the cooking of korma, the cooking of India is.
So you're a member of the rat protection society, eh?
Yes, definitely.
But also, apart from the actual ingredient, what about things like thickening or the texture of the sauce in the end?
Yeah, so it's a very rich base or a gravy or sauce. It's not thin or watery. And so the thickening, again, natural thickening. We don't like anything like flour or different kinds of flour. But in the north, you'd find nuts, which would be the thickening agent. Most common, almond and cashews, but then pistachio nuts also gave a beautiful flavor and thickening. Macadamia I have used here to, you know, sort of add a very, very beautiful, decadent, rich flavor. But then as you go to the south, coconut, so that again thickens and gives it the beautiful coconut flavor as well. Any kind of hung yogurt like a labneh is also fairly thick and rich, and so you don't then, I mean, if you know, allergic to nuts or anything like that, you can use just the thickened yogurt, so you get that taste. And cheese. When I say cheese, it's like paneer cheese. Yeah. So, yeah. Mm. Or even ricotta one could use. Yeah.
Yeah. And there are not great strictures on what you can or can't do.
Well, if you stick to the traditions, I suppose the recipes might say, no, you can only do this. But I think Indian food is really good in the sense that it is not standardized at all. So if there is a recipe, then no one fights about, you know, whether this is exactly right or not. You are allowed to put your own take or interpretation on it, as long as, you know, the spirit, you sort of keep to the spirit of the thing. So, really, there's no restrictions as such.
Are there eating places that you would go to that specialize in korma, or is it usually one of a range of foods?
Well, in India, you can go certainly to special places, and they're usually run by the Muslims who have, it's sort of, they're really specialized in the art of cooking kormas and biryanis. And so, yeah, there are definite restaurants and areas where you would go in India to eat this kind of food. But apart from that, I'm not aware of places in other parts of the world.
So right at the beginning, you mentioned the 10th century. Where did kormas come from? Did they come from the north or where?
Yeah, so the Mughals, the sort of the arch forebearers of the Taj Mahal builders. So then they arrived in India from the Middle East, Sumeria and Samarkand. They really absolutely hated the food of India. There was, you know, no melons, no beautiful kormas, no long-grained rice. There was, you know, all kinds of what they felt really peasant food. So, and spiced, especially the chili wouldn't have been around then, so they didn't have chili, but they found the spice mostly quite overbearing. So because they were used to all gentle, you know, saffron and poppy seeds and things like that, rather than the cumin and the corianders. And so when they arrived, they were actually quite distraught, and then slowly started bringing their ingredients and teaching the cooks how to cook their way. But then the cooks, being Indians, I suppose some were brought in their input as well. And so the korma, as it developed, became amalgamation of what they had eaten in the Middle East and what the, you know, Indians ate at that time. So it's something not particularly, you know, from just the Middle East as such.
Mm. Any religious associations or prohibitions?
Not really, but the Muslims, I mean, we say, you know, are the masters of korma cooking.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I mean, but there's no religion. I mean, that's just because they just like to eat that kind of thing, but it's nothing religious. So, yeah, everyone enjoys it.
Mm. And in Australia, you've been cooking kormas for hundreds, I was going to say thousands of people over the years.
Yeah, see all my wrinkles. Oh, sorry, I thought it meant thousands of years.
Oh, no, your complexion is so wonderful because of all the kormas.
Yeah, the ghee that's been anointed on it.
Well, the end of that question is, are there particular things that Aussies have taken to, or you can almost expect that, oh, well, here they come, they're going to order one of these?
Aussies have this idea of a korma, which unfortunately, you know, is sort of taught to them by the local takeaway, and it may or may not be the right, you know, it's not, as I said, there's no one recipe. But at the same time, a korma is a very rich dish and it's meant to be eaten only maximum once a month, if that, because it's a special occasion dish. It is so rich, you need a tiny quantities of it. So this korma that we are eating in from the local takeaway is generally something that's lightened up and probably doesn't have, definitely doesn't have things like saffron or poppy seeds or anything like that, because those are expensive ingredients. And yes, when you have a, you know, 600 ml container for $10-$12, there's no way that you're going to get a proper korma. But this is what the Australians have been used to. And sometimes they've also been used to something worse, which is in a dodgy Indian restaurant, they have the choice of having their korma hotted up, which is an absolute travesty, because korma is a mild dish and the ingredients that go in it respond to sort of the low chili factor rather than just destroying everything with lots of chili. So lots of Australians think, oh no, we can have a korma hot if we want to, and tell the person, the chef, to make it hotter, and then that becomes what they like, but that's not really a proper korma.
It's gone one step outside the fence.
It has. And while, you know, I'm all for going one step or two steps over the fence, out of the fence, but certain things are meant to keep true to their character to be the best. And also, you know, there's nothing wrong with subtlety and delicate. Lots of Australians feel that Indian food by its very nature has to be this hot and spicy, you know, repast. And that is not the correct thing at all. I think one should train one's taste buds to appreciate the finer things in life.
What a good idea. And at Ruggie's Spicerie in Hutt Street, do you always have korma as one of the offerings?
Actually, this is something really strange, because we did have a korma dinner the other night, but there is no korma on the menu so far. However, I'm going to rectify that tomorrow.
Well, you have to hang a sign.
We better get some kormas quickly happening. But it's just that being the menu was sort of done in summer, and korma being such a rich dish, we kept to the light and healthy rather than the rich wintery. But now winter's here almost, and so we shall go into the korma land.
Time to hang the korma shingle out.
It is.
Well, Ragini, thanks very much for talking with us on Gastronaut again.
Thank you, Bruce. Always a pleasure to be here.